evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is July 23rd, 2015. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I had a great trip across the heartland, a great discussion with Dr. Farrell in person, which we'll publish in 2 weeks. John Rappaport is coming up next. And I finally made it to Palo Alto last Friday, so I'm getting settled in for several weeks in the Bay Area and really looking forward to being out here. On the way back, we're going to have lunch with Catherine in Austin, Texas on August 22nd. You can sign up for that now. And then after I get back to Hickory Valley, I'll turn around and get headed to Europe in early September. And we're going to have a lunch with Catherine in Amsterdam in the Netherlands on October 17th. We'll be set up to get signups for that starting next week. And for those of you who look way ahead and know you're going to want to celebrate spring in 2016, we're going to do it again. Richard Dolan in New York, April 30th, 2016. Our theme tonight is the name of a new commentary up on the blog for subscribers on Bully Watch. I did a show on USA Watchdog, and we, Greg Hunter and I, got into the Iran deal, and Greg flew into bully mode, and which is something you see happen a lot on Israel. And then I did an interview with Cynthia McKinney, and we talked about all the bullying she had to deal with on Israeli issues. Anyway, so it put bullying on my mind, and it's a tactic that is often used when no rational approach will work. So you can't appeal to somebody's intelligence, you can't appeal to their humanity, so you just have to make a lot of noise and try and intimidate them. Anyway, it's much more of a New York tactic. Greg has worked for many years as a newscaster in New York. So And I have to say, it's an unbelievably cost-effective tactic in American life, and it's happening more and more. And as I looked across the news, I've seen it. You're just watching it everywhere. For example, because Americans are very alienated from the election process, not having a lot of faith in it, we see Trump, who's very good at playing bullying tactics, being used as sort of an entertainment ruse to try and get people interested in the campaign again. If you look at Trump, the theory that Trump's independent is ridiculous, or financially independent. He's deeply into Hawk and into the bank. So, whatever they want him to do, he's going to do. But he's very good at the bullying tactic. And then we have Wesley Clark, who used to be reasonably okay. In fact, I just used a little description of his in my commentary on the Iran deal. Wesley Clark gets on MSNBC and starts talking about how we have to round up kids and put them into internment camps. So whether it's bullying in style or bullying in proposals, the bullies are certainly out in force. And again, bullying is what people do when they can't, they don't have a lot to stand on in terms of rational discourse. Again, if people start bullying, don't take it seriously. Just realize somebody's on a leash doing what Mr. Global wants. Read the commentary, because it tells a story about some guy at the CIA trying to bully me. I couldn't figure out whether the guy was just mind controlled or psychotic or what it was. Anyway, I tell the story in the commentary. Money and markets, price deflation, and more price deflation. Crude's now at $48. Gold has broken through the 1100 line. I want to see if it stays broken through on the Friday close. Right now it's at 1089. It's not a good sign, and it's very important to remember if it really breaks through that 1100 line, we could see gold go down as low as 800. The copper price is at 6 years low. China is clearly slowing. We see some interesting things, though, in the market. When Alibaba came public, it was a real wake-up call to the guys at Amazon, because Alibaba has been in the black and had profits for years, and it was a message to Amazon, it's time to really have profits, and sure enough, Amazon has produced it. But in doing so, its market cap passed that of Walmart. very interesting. And then Kugel had a great day over the last week. It was up 60 to 65 billion in one day, which is more than the entire market cap of Lockheed Martin, which is now about 62 billion. And so Google's market value increased literally by more than Lockheed Martin is worth in total in one day. Just goes to show you that digital surveillance and control is deemed to be more cost-effective than physical control. So let's look at the markets. The U.S. dollar index now up at 97.19. It almost made it to 97.5 and then has backed off a tad. As people are getting worried about sort of price deflation, we're seeing bonds do a little bit better. The bond aggregate is now down 0.9% for the year, and TLT, which was down as much as 6%, that's the 20-year plus ETF, Treasury ETF, was down 6% plus, is now down 3.84%, so it's come back up a little bit. Stock market looks very soft. The S&P is now back down to up 2.1% for the year. Developed markets outside of North America up 6.2%. Emerging markets now down 4.3% and looking very soft. The German DAX is now up 18% for the year. And if you look at the 5-year and 10-year charts, the DAX is now touching or surpassing the U.S. market. So very strong. Germany clearly the beneficiary of some of the re-engineering going on in Europe. China now up 1.6% for the year. One of the big questions in the U.S. market has clearly been rising on healthcare. Healthcare has been very important. It's clearly, if you haven't read my commentaries, the stock profits of Obamacare, this is clearly floating on a sea of government money and government rules and now mergers. The joke, of course, being that if you look at the pace of mergers, that we're still going to get a single-payer system. And also the insurance companies have big premium raises in hoping to get that this year. And as you look at how the market is really, other than the sort of re-engineering into the digital systems, which has some efficiencies in theory for the economics, certainly not, I don't believe, for the people, the question is, how much longer can this healthcare rise last? There's a real question given the ballooning in healthcare stock values and the precipitous drop in commodities. At some point, you have to wonder if there isn't a healthcare to commodity swap, particularly in countries whose ETFs have been hammered by commodity prices, Australia, Canada, New Zealand. They're starting to look very attractive. The Chinese opened the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. It opened in Shanghai this week. That was celebrated. And you almost wonder if a lot of the screaming by U.S. pundits that the Chinese economy and growth is over and no longer the sort of engine of global growth, how much of that is still the sort of economic warfare going on over China's role in starting the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. Gold now down 8%, silver down 7%. Charts look very poor. What's interesting, as I said, the premiums in the physical markets are rising. Franklin Sanders sent out a thing this week about the extraordinary premiums in the junk silver market, which fit with what other dealers are telling me. So we're watching a real fight for physical at the same time prices are clearly coming down, and the charts look very soft. As I said, remember, it's very important you only hold your core position right now, because, again, if we do break through the 1,100 line on gold, we could see 700, you know, and at a gold-to-silver ratio of 75, you could see silver at 9, so don't be surprised. So just make sure whatever you're holding its core and you're happy to live through wherever things go. Oil now down 24% for the year. The commodities Jefferies index down 9% for the year. So, and it doesn't, if you look at the charts, it looks like this is far from over. So again, price deflation is upon us and just tremendous weakness in the commodities market, but still real geopolitical squabble over who gets control of resources, including the gold and silver. There was a bridge collapse on Highway 10. I mentioned that because in the infrastructure report, the first big video I highlighted was the bridge scene from Margin Call. And in fact, Highway 10 is a very important highway to me. It's the one I take home. I came across on 40, but going back, I was planning on dropping down to the Los Angeles area and then coming back on Highway 10. Apparently, the feds have given California $2 million to fix, I think it's in California, not Arizona, to fix the bridge, and apparently it'll be open relatively soon. So I won't have to drop down and take Highway 8. It would have meant another 4 hours on my journey. Very, very appropriate. If you haven't seen our infrastructure web presentation, we're going to have the PDF ready in a week and the book ready in another 2 weeks. And it's really a remarkable transcript, so I would encourage you to read it. But definitely look at that bridge scene from Margin Call, because it says it all. And that bridge collapse and the thought of having to spend another 4 hours driving back to Tennessee really brought it home for me. The Greek negotiations continue. I can't imagine the pain and waste that's happening on the ground. Greece is a relatively small part of the European economy, and the debt has essentially been moved out of the banks to the governments. But in that sense, Greece can be marginalized. And so it's a reminder, as you watch what's happening, of the importance individually of having resiliency, being able to do things for yourself, being able to barter, keeping to a low overhead. Farrell has a new book out called The Third Way, Nazi International and the European Union. I'm going to post a review of it next week on the blog. He and I talk about it in our discussion, which we'll post in 2 weeks. But I strongly recommend it for anybody who wants to understand what's happening geopolitically, particularly in the European Union. It's fascinating. The Bohemian Grove is underway. There's a commentary up on the blog. It started July 18th. Interestingly enough, Jeb Bush hit San Francisco right beforehand and did an economic roundtable with George Shultz at the Hoover Institution. So I'm assuming he's out running around in the Redwoods with everyone else. My expectation is one of the big conversations out there is whacking up the Iran deal. You have $120 billion of assets being unfrozen, and I'm sure that there were deals as to what companies were going to get what pieces of business and get back into doing transactions with Iran. Columbia University has come out as the first university to divest their endowment from private prison stocks. That follows Hillary Clinton's effort to make a speech about how wrong the policies that her husband's administration was so aggressive in instituting. Extraordinary hypocrisy. They're disgusting. But Columbia's students and Columbia playing along, it would be interesting. I'm violently opposed to private prison companies. As anybody who's read my book, Dylan Reed and the Aristocracy of Stock Profits, knows. Our second part on trade agreements is out. It's on the trade services agreement, and we're working on another a part three on the transatlantic. But I would encourage you to read those because these trade agreements are coming. They're going to be very important. Here come the robots. Japan has announced that they've opened their first all-robotics hotel. It's one way to adjust to life in an aging population. No youngsters to be the bellhops and clean the hotel. So there we are. And it'll be very interesting to see how that hotel fares. But it's a reminder that particularly in the service industries, we're going to see an explosion of robots around the world. Lots of people lining up for Hero this week. Dr. Nick Gonzalez, who was a marvelous doctor. You could read about him in Franklin Sanders' The Money Changer. He was highlighted in Suzanne Summers' book, Knockout. New York doctor, famous for healing cancer with natural methods. As healthy it could be, suddenly, unexpectedly have a heart attack. Who knows? Am I suspicious? Yes, very. But remarkable man and truly a hero and worth familiarizing yourself with his work. He has a book out if you're interested in that topic. Another hero, comedian Jim Carrey, came out on the vaccine issue very, very brave for somebody with that kind of celebrity status. And he's definitely getting more than a little bit of bullying going on towards him. Finally, I put up the best video from the Ted Sydney event that I attended when I was in Australia by Dr. Al Mudaris, who was a refugee, came from the Middle East, and unbelievable story of someone who's sort of accomplished and succeeded and made the world a much better place against all odds. And if you want some inspiration, make sure to watch that video. It's called Refugee to Medical Revolutionary. Ask Catherine. Was hoping you could comment on the Canadian real estate market. I'm in my late 20s and I'm based in a smaller community, a ferry ride away from Vancouver. I'm struggling about whether or not I should get into the local real estate market. We've experienced a correction of about 25% in the top end, which hasn't fully recovered. However, the entry level has just moved sideways for the past 7 to 8 years. A brand new single family house can be purchased in the low 400s and an older single family home in the low 300s. We've had a significant development of condos and the market seems to be bursting with them, and they can sell below the 200s. With interest rates so low, there are opportunities to pick something up for less than the cost of renting. I work out of province May through October, so I wouldn't be looking to move into my purchase, but rather rent it out. Comments. I have November through April free, so I've given serious thought to purchasing an empty lot and hiring a friend to build a house with me. I don't know if that is potential for profit in a spec house, but it could be a great education. I hold a core position in precious metals and currently carry no debt. I continue to save up my cash, and I'm not sure whether I should jump in real estate or wait for the next correction in the stock market or something else entirely. Please let me know what you think, and thank you and the Solaria team for everything you do. There's simply no better source in the world for what's really going on than the Solaria reports. Thanks again. Thank you. Very kind words. I'm not familiar with the Vancouver real estate market, but I will tell you one thing. Unless the Fukushima problem is a problem from Vancouver, some say it is, I don't know. But other than that, Vancouver has a great future. It has a great economic future for many different reasons, including the sort of connections in Asian and the amount of Asian money that's going to continue to come into Vancouver. So I think Vancouver is a great long-term investment, subject to the make sure you check out what the Fukushima impact is, if any. I think the idea of building your own, it has tremendous potential. Those skills are invaluable. So if I was in your age range, I would give very serious thought to building it yourself, buying a lot and building it yourself. It also means you can make a house that is very resilient and efficient. So you can take a look at what permaculture teaches you about how to build a house. A lot of the energy efficient things, heating by the, you know, solar windows. Anyway, so I would definitely explore that. Make sure if you do that you really invest properly in the design and make sure you've paid attention to what's marketable in terms of both using the property for rent or when and if you want to sell it. You think you might not sell it, but I assure you the day will come. So generally, the other thing is I think the U.S. administration will do very aggressive things to get the housing market heated up, and that will also impact Canada. So if anything, I would be relatively optimistic about real estate in Vancouver. I also think the biggest concern I have for young people is that they get shut out of the market. So I would research and I would design, and then I would keep an eye. I might buy a lot before the fall. I'd keep an eye. I'd wait to see what happens in the fall because I think we're going to have a very interesting September and October. But I'd be looking to buy in the, you know, when prices are down, and particularly in the winter months. And I'm assuming that's true for Vancouver. Catherine, I just watched USA Watchdog with Greg Hunter. Men open our mouth, we should be listening. Anyway, if you go back home on Interstate 80, our home is in Elko, Nevada. We have a good Bosque restaurant, The Star. Wife and I would like to buy you lunch or dinner, if possible. Oh, it's too bad. I just came across that through Nevada, and I wish I had known because I would have stopped. I'm going back on the southern route, but I'll be back in 2016. I'm going to keep your information, and I will let you know when I come through. I'd love to do that. It sounds wonderful. Dear Catherine, can you tell us your definition of what you refer to as a central banking warfare model? Yes. The central banking warfare model is the Western economic model that has been predominant for 500 years. The central banks print fiat currency, and then the Navy and military of the related to the central bank make sure everybody takes the fiat paper, or if they try and create alternative paper, they stop them from doing it. It's pretty simple. Dear Catherine, after having observed the media for many years, I believe that the powers that be can get all of the major media outlets to broadcast whatever stories they want us to know about, and also get all of these same outlets to not report to us on any of the stories they don't want us to know about. In your opinion, is that accurate? Well, I would say it's 80 to 90% accurate. You have to remember Leonard Cohen's line, there's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. So certainly the media's got progressively more and more controlled over the last 50 years. It's been a long, slow process. If you want to get a real flavor of the machine turning on and off, watch the documentary about the Dixie Chicks problems when they came out, when the lead singer came out against the war in Iraq in London in 2004. Anyway, that documentary will give a good sense of how the machine turns on and off. Let's go to the movies. Our movie is a wonderful documentary by Netflix. I just love, you know, that there are things that would never make it out of Hollywood, but since Netflix has been created and is responding to the demand of its customers and constituencies, we're seeing things that would never have come through Hollywood, and it's very exciting. The documentary is about Nina Simone, who's one of my favorite performance artists. She was a classical pianist trained at Juilliard, and so very much out of the classical mode, started singing cabaret to basically pay the rent, and the rest is history. She became involved in the civil rights movements and literally had to leave the country in 1970 with real concerns for her safety. A lot of people had been killed, and I think she was right to do so. But the film is a very sobering reminder of what happens if you lose your, you know, if you get very angry and you lose your love in the face of the evil of this world. And it was, you know, holding on to your love is something that Congresswoman McKinney and I have grappled with a lot. So I thought it was very appropriate that I have that documentary on at the same time I interviewed her. But it's a wonderful introduction to this extraordinary musician. And so if you don't know Nina Simone, if you haven't had the opportunity to really enjoy a remarkable musician, I would encourage you to watch that documentary. It's very, very interesting. Our interview is with dear Congresswoman, former Congresswoman, former House of Representatives in Georgia, Cynthia McKinney, and what an amazing woman she is. She's working on, she just got her PhD, and she's transitioning to her career as a university professor. She's taught both high school and university before, author of two books, Ain't Nothing Like Freedom, and then editor of The Illegal War on Libya. We had just a rock and roll conversation about what the real issues would be and the issues she'd bring forward if she was running for president. And it's a great conversation. She's got a strong mind and a strong personality, and she just tells it like it is. So we had fun. Cynthia McKinney from Bangladesh, and you can hear the interview. It's posted. Well, that's it for this week. In closing, next week we've got a new teaching on imagination from John Rappaport. Then my conversation, I call it At Home in the Heartland with Dr. Joseph Farrell. I ask him every time I do a wrap-up to read it and respond, and that's what this conversation is. And then a great conversation on August 13th, A Free and Inspired Life with Franklin Sanders. I wanted to ask Franklin, in the face of all the kinds of obstacles we're dealing with, okay, how do you do it? And he and I will have a frank, bold conversation about that. So until I do Money and Markets next on August 6th, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.